Nearly 4 million people are starving in Somalia. How will aid get there?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now the global perspective on business and economics. The United Nations today formally declared a famine in parts of Somalia. The last time it did that was more than 30 years ago in Ethiopia in the 1980s. There is anarchy in Somalia. The U.S. provided humanitarian support there in the 90s, but that proved very, very difficult. And today, the U.S. government is reluctant to provide aid because of the presence of Al-Qaeda. Nevertheless, the U.N. says it needs hundreds of millions of dollars in the coming weeks. David Orr is spokesman for the U.N.'s World Food Program, and he's with us now from Nairobi, Kenya. Hi, David.
Hello there.
What exactly does an official famine declaration do? Does that mean there's more funding going in?
It does mean there's more funding going in the sense that once a declaration of famine has been made, it secures tremendous media attention and, by consequence, lots of follow-up from donors and governments around the world. It has no direct legal implications, but it does bring tremendous publicity to a situation that has already been defined as an emergency.
I know Somalia is a failed state. What about the logistics of getting aid to those who are in need? How will the aid get there?
It will be difficult, but not impossible, and such is the humanitarian imperative here to save the lives of so many people. Once we secure the conditions that will allow us to operate in there in terms of security, access, not only to deliver, but also to monitor the distribution of food, then I think things will become a lot easier, and nothing is being ruled out. We're looking at everything from cross-border deliveries to airdrops at the moment.
David Orr with the World Food Program in Nairobi. David, thank you.
You're welcome.
And several Chinese companies are planning to go public here in the U.S. this week. Among them is Xunlei, China's third largest video streaming site. Now, that site uses what's known as peer-to-peer technology to share music, movies, software, and the like. Some call it China's Napster, but like Napster, there's a problem. In Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Rob Schmitz.
Lawyer Jack Chen logs into Xunlei and begins to download a movie.
The Chinese name of Avatar is Avanda.
10 seconds later, the movie begins. Xunlei gives 300 million people access to billions of songs, movies, and TV shows. Much of it, like this version of Avatar, is stolen. Greg Pilarowski heads Pillar Legal in Shanghai. He says Xunlei blatantly violates U.S. law, yet its name will soon appear on NASDAQ.
And that means that it's the U.S. capital markets that are actually going to fund the expansion of this company. And I think that that is of important interest to America. Should we open up our capital markets to companies whose business models would, in the United States, be illegal?
It's a question many lawyers are asking. Xunlei has been sued nearly 250 times in the past 3 years for copyright infringement. But history shows investors are more forgiving. Last year, another Chinese site carrying pirated movies went public in the U.S. It had the biggest one-day gain for a new IPO in 5 years. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are higher today in Asia by about an average of 1%. Same for Europe. Maybe investors are excited about Apple's earnings. The computer giant said revenues shot way up with brisk iPhone sales. Wall Street yesterday, markets rebounded big time. The Dow surged 202 points to close at 12,587. That was its best day of the year.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, protecting online privacy by removing your personal data from the internet and stopping unwanted mail. Reputation.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance, trained local agents committed to small business success. More at 1-866-200-4BIZ. For the latest in healthcare, Marketplace recently visited Russia for an intriguing look at the changing healthcare system. Visit marketplace.org and click on the health link for more.
The space shuttle Atlantis is expected back on Earth tomorrow, and that touchdown will mark the beginning of a new arrangement with Russia to get American astronauts to the International Space Station. Now, that reliance means more than $1 billion for Russia's space industry. From Moscow, here's reporter Peter Van Dyke.
Instead of touching down gracefully on home soil, NASA astronauts will now land with a bump in a Soyuz capsule. Russia's space agency is contracted to take astronauts to the space station through 2016. By then, one ticket will cost NASA $63 million. Russia has lots of plans for the money.
There are a number of new projects in manned space flight which had been started in previous 3-4 years. And those projects, they absolutely need a lot of funding.
Anatoly Zak is a journalist who runs the website Russian Space Web. While U.S. companies race to replace the shuttle, he says Russia must develop better spacecraft too.
Russian space industry absolutely needs to develop also new spacecraft which will match or exceed the capabilities of the new generation U.S. or whoever comes online.
That won't be easy. The Soyuz rocket has not changed fundamentally since the 1960s. Former cosmonaut Georgi Grechko says it's time to move on.
I remember Khrushchev's expression that we make rockets like sausages. But if you eat even the best German sausages for 30 years, you get sick of them. We need to do something new.
The Soviets made and ate a lot of sausages, but you didn't eat them if you could afford better. 50 years after Yuri Gagarin's historic first flight, Russia's space industry has a chance to dine again at the top table. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
And finally, a new survey out this month says there's a big trust gap in the workplace. Merit's research found only 10% of all employees said they trust the management of their company in times of uncertainty. A slightly better 14% of those employees said they think their management is ethical and honest. The highest percentage of employees who trust the people for whom they work comes from the youngest age group polled, 18 to 24-year-olds. So much for rebellious youth. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, online at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You could say they had an identity crisis in the run-up to the financial crisis, public company or private.
If it walks, flies, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And Fannie and Freddie walk, fly, and quack like private companies.
Only they're really not. I'm Kai Rizdahl. That story next time on Marketplace. The numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.